I don't know what to do here. I don't know how to. I don't know how to handle myself.
Dude, this is what a big boy radio show is like.
This is. I don't have to like constantly looking like, okay, let's see, are we in program? Like, okay, let's see. Okay,
Joe's got it. All right, Joe's got it. Joe's been trained. Joe's good. I told you earlier before the show. Like, don't even worry about it.
I started giving him a whole spiel earlier, and God bless Joe, because he lets me get through this like 8-minute thing,
uh-huh.
And he's like, so I knew all that, and I just, whoop, my bad, dog. It's on me for not asking
questions. Joe's ready to go.
I need to ask more questions. So Joe Brazil in today, pushing the buttons, which is great, except I can still push those buttons.
There we go.
So I still have some buttons, but he's going to be doing all the stuff behind the scenes. So salute to Joe. Can't wait till he's here full time. It's going to be great.
It'll be solid.
It's going to be really great. You brought something up to me. James Hamm will be back on Monday. But you brought something up to me yesterday when we were kind of talking about like, yeah, okay, here's kind of what we've got for tomorrow. Here's the bones of a show for tomorrow. And you brought up the Brock Purdy, Brandon Ayuk dynamic.
Yeah, so basically I brought up yesterday that if you're losing CMC and Debo, it's always going to hurt their stars and all that, big time importance to the offense and all that stuff. But if Brock Purdy is a quarterback that we say that he is, mm-hmm. some in this station have said he's top five around there. So if he's the quarterback that we say that he is, and Brandon Ayuk is the number one receiver that we say that he is, Jordan Mason's out here churning out 100-yard games and all that, defense is still elite.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, the 49ers should be fine still, I believe. It's a lot more than other teams have.
Yeah, you'd think so. That's kind of where I've fallen as well. They've made a bet on Brandon Ayuk long-term, which I think was the right move. All signs point to Brock Purdy getting a massive contract this offseason. And those two are going to be your offensive foundation for the next half decade or ideally more, right?
Uh-huh.
So why not start now? Because this is going to be a taste of what life is like over the next 3 or 4 years as Christian McCaffrey ages out, as Debo Samuel ages out, or those two players get too expensive to keep around. I'm with you, man. This is just such a huge week for the 49ers, not just to get to try and beat the Rams and get a division win, and we'll talk plenty about that. But from a, what does this look like long term?
Yeah, because flipping around, like say they go 500 or I'm below 500 in this little stretch without Debo and CMC, it's like, do we still feel the same way about everything?
Probably not. It would depend a little bit. I'm not going to sit here today on September 19th, and let's say Debo misses 3 games and they go 1-2.
Uh-huh.
Let's say they lose to the Rams and they beat the Patriots and then lose to, who do they play next? The Cardinals? It doesn't matter. They're going 1-2. It is the Cardinals. So Rams, Pats, Cardinals. Let's say they go 1-2 in that stretch. I'm not going to hit the panic button necessarily because that's kind of a hallmark of Kyle Shanahan teams or it has been.
Uh-huh.
His all-time record, it's gotten better through the first couple of months, but through September and October, they're never stellar.
Yeah.
And then you get into November, December, and that's when they start playing really well. So it wouldn't be panic time, but it would definitely, to your point, if Brock Purdy's elite, if he's going to be that guy, if he's going to be a solid tier two quarterback, and if Brandon Ayuk is a $30 million receiver up there with Tyreek Hill and Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb
just
and AJ
the elite
Brown,
of the elite.
Right. If he's going to be a top 10 guy and Brock Purdy's going to be a top 5 to 8 quarterback, you're fine.
Yeah.
You should be totally fine. The Rams are beat to hell. The Rams are already up against, they are already having to strategize who goes on IR and who doesn't because you can return 8 players from IR.
I already saw Cooper Kupp, they're not going to put him on IR, but it's like pretty much, he's probably still not going to be back for another 4 weeks or so.
Right. The timeline says he'll probably miss the requisite number of weeks to go on IR, but they already have, I was reading Jordan Rodriguez in The Athletic today, 6 players that they plan on returning from IR already. And we're in week 3.
Yeah, it's not great.
Not great. So they're already having to like that's how beat up they are. They have. I was trying to go through this today, and again, we'll go through this more tomorrow. But you have the Rams have a starter at left tackle who's coming back from a suspension. They have a backup at left guard. They have a backup rookie at center who could technically be classified as their third string center, 6th round pick. They have starter Kevin Dotson at right guard, who's hurt and playing through an ankle injury. And then they have Rob Havenstein, their starter at right tackle, who is just coming back from an injury.
Yeah, that's not sustainable.
It's their third different starting offensive line of the season in 3 weeks. So the Rams are super beat up. So I think you got to go get that game, obviously. And then it's like the Patriots have been better than I think people expected.
The Patriots are, I guess the term in the NFL is frisky. Like, they're it's going to be ugly, but...
They're going to be hard to beat.
Yeah. But if you're a team like the 49ers, you should still get that one.
Yeah. So, again, and if you have Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk, if those are two top 8 to 10 guys at their positions, you'll be fine. You should beat the Patriots at home. And the next week, it's the Cardinals. Cardinals are playing well. It's a division game that might be tough. But again, to your point, you have the talent to go hang with and beat the Cardinals. And that's kind of where I'm landing here. So if they go 1-2, okay, it's not going to be panic time. But I do think it would start to open up some questions about, hey, what does Brock Purdy do here?
Yeah.
Is Brock Purdy really a guy who, okay, yeah, he runs this system at a super high level, which is great for now. But when you're projecting into the future, which I think matters, if you're projecting into the future and he's going 1-2 in this stretch where the Niners should go 2-1 or 3-0, I think it would certainly raise questions.
Yeah, because I'm not gonna say Brock's top five or anything. I think he's a top 10 quarterback, but just going through this stretch going forward, I think we're gonna learn what we need to. I think about those guys.
Do you have Brock Purdy and Tua in the top 10?
Right now, Tua's probably 11, 12. If I went through the list,
I don't think I got Brock in the top 10. I just, dude, it's been really telling the first couple of weeks. He just has not looked as sharp.
Yeah,
and this is why I'm not getting on the side of, oh, Brock Purdy's just not as good as we thought he was. I can't get on that side because, hey, he just didn't play that much in the preseason. Maybe he's a little, I thought he was fine against the Jets. He wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. And then I didn't think he was very good against the Vikings. He looked indecisive. He looked confused. And he certainly wasn't on the same page as Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
And that's something that they have to get figured out here against the Rams. And Purdy hasn't been great without Christian McCaffrey these 2 weeks, but I think there's still room for, I think there's still an explanation that goes beyond Christian McCaffrey. If he's continuing to struggle this week against the Rams defense, it's not very good. And then he goes in and struggles against the Patriots. And then he goes in and struggles against, at some point you start to go, all right, well, now if you keep running into the same problem week after week.
Yeah, well, you figure it too. At week three, like, sure, the first couple of weeks we didn't play much in the preseason, blah, blah, blah. But at this point, all right, now it's time to get it going now.
Yeah, middle to end of September, you start to have to get rolling for sure. And this is kind of the point. Like, Christian McCaffrey's out. That makes playing offense harder, for sure. Deebo Samuel going to be out for at least the next 2 weeks. For the sake of this discussion, we're saying 3 weeks. But Kyle Shanahan said a couple. But for the sake of this discussion, we'll do 3. That's going to make offense harder. Like, no doubt, without question. That's inarguable.
For every team it would.
Right. But your point, and the point I agree with, is if Brock Purdy is that dude, it shouldn't matter.
Exactly.
Go look at that. He has had the best set of offensive weapons in the league since he stepped on the field in 2022. And he still has a really good set of offensive weapons. Jordan Mason is second in the league in rushing yards. George Kittle is still one of the best pass catching tight ends in the sport. Juwan Jennings is a really, really high quality number 3 wide receiver, and he's going to be the number 2. Brandon Ayuk is a all pro. You still have Trent Williams.
Well, it's just like you said, if we're going to consider him elite and all that, like, you kind of look at what Josh Allen is doing with Buffalo, like, they're 2-0. Brandon Ayuk is clearly the number 1 receiver on everyone on the Bills. Juwan Jennings is a lot better than anyone on the Bills and all that. So just but he's got a lot more to work with still.
Yeah, man. And that's where I think short term, small picture, Ayuk and Purdy need to get on the same page now if they're going to start winning games.
How much of that is on Ayuk not being around and still trying to get into the flow of things?
Oh, I think so some of it's on Ayuk, some of it's on the 49ers, but just Ayuk's absence, I think that has everything to do with it. Because Pro Football Focus has a metric that they call separation percentage. And it's the number of routes you run and then the number of times you separated against a defense that wasn't like, that was basically trying to defend you. Not like, they're dropping 2 high safeties and you're going to be wide open for 10 yards, but they'll take that because they're just trying not to give up a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, so in 14 of those opportunities, he was open on 12 of them against the Vikings. And that tracks with kind of what you go see when you go back and you watch the all 22 view, the whole field view. He's open. Purdy's just not getting the ball. And whether that was a function of the defense, I think that was part of it, the Vikings defense for sure.
Purdy was sacked 6 times in that game?
Yeah, but and so many of them, he's holding onto the ball too long, which is my concern. Like that's why it's like, oh, he's learning how to play quarterback without having Christian McCaffrey just there.
Gotcha.
He's that's at least what it looks like to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's from my view, that's what I think. And at some point you have to figure that out. Because if everything you're doing as a quarterback is contingent on Christian McCaffrey being there, then what are we doing? Then you're not going to pay that guy $60 million because he's not always going to have Christian McCaffrey.
That's another thing. We got to figure out whether or not he's going to be the highest paid quarterback in the league, or if you're going to pay Trevor Lawrence money, or how that's going to go down.
And I think I still think as of right now, I think he's going to get $60 plus million a year. I very much still think that. But at the same time, if they really struggle while Deebo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey are out, and then there continue to be struggles with Christian McCaffrey out, and then McCaffrey comes back and he's awesome again, I have a really hard time believing the Niners are going to go, yeah, we'll pay that guy $62 million and have him reset the market, when there's all this evidence that in the post-McCaffrey Samuel era, he's not going to be as effective.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to justify it.
Yeah. And maybe they would, because they want stability at the position and they don't have any other options. But man, I have a hard time believing they would do that. So
we're gonna learn a lot, Kyle. Can't wait.
That's kind of the big picture thing here. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So I do think though that what we saw on Sunday was Deebo Samuel had 10 targets, right? And I think so much of that was Purdy going like, I don't know what to do here. I'm gonna throw it to Deebo and hope he makes a play. And he did a bunch of times. Bailed out some high throws, made some tough catches in traffic. Took an interception away from Dolphins legend Andrew Van Ginkle.
Shout out Gink.
Dude, the Gink, he's really good. Really effective NFL player. So there were I think so many instances where Ayuk not being in camp showed up in that spot. Where it's not, hey, I'm gonna blind throw this to the middle of the field because I know Brandon Ayuk's gonna be there. It was, I know I got Deebo on the shorter route, I'm just gonna try and force it into him. That option's not gonna be there this week.
Yeah. I mean at this point Brandon Ayuk and Brock Purdy have no choice.
If they don't figure it out,
then they're in trouble.
Yeah, man. And that's for this season. That's long term. And I think they're going to be fine. They were on the same page all of last year. Brandon Ayuk was the most effective intermediate middle of the field receiver in the sport.
Yeah, I was yelling all offseason, you got to pay Ayuk because that's Brock Purdy's guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's effective in the same areas of the field that Brock Purdy likes to throw to. 1,000%. So I'm right there with you, man. The 49ers have plenty of talent. If you're going to tout this roster as the best roster in football, which I have, other people have, people smarter than me have, it is on paper the best roster in football. That's partly because of, hey, Brock Purdy looks like he's more than just a competent quarterback. He's like good.
Yeah.
And if he's going to be good, then you got to start showing it now.
And I think they will be fine too. This is more about just people saying, "Oh, if they're losing CMC and Deebo, like they're in trouble. Mm-hmm. Like, what are they gonna do?" Just, well, if Brock is who we say he is and all that, like I said, with Ayuk the same, but Jordan Mason's been perfect, as good as you can be since he's stepped in and all that. Defense is still great. Then they should still be fine then.
Yeah, I have some. So their defense has been up and down, and we'll talk about that. I got a handful. There were some problems yesterday that we didn't get to. The three big problems the 49ers are facing, and one of them is something defensively that is a pretty big concern to me that we'll talk about coming up a little bit later in the show. We got a Thursday night football game tonight with week 3 of the NFL season kicking off. Vic Tafer, who covers the Raiders for The Athletic, he's going to join us at 10:30. I want to talk about last week a little bit, and then look ahead to this week. The Raiders playing the Carolina Panthers, a really good chance to gain some momentum for the Silver and Black to move to 2-1. And we've got some other week 3 NFL stuff. And Mel Kiper wants to ban defense in the
old
NFL.
Man Mel,
dude.
It's very wild. Ban the 3-point line ish.
Wild take from our guy Mel Kiper Jr. We'll get into that as well. But week 3, the NFL season begins tonight, and it's a big one. So Jesse, you're a Dolphins guy.
Yeah.
Big game for you tonight. AFC East showdown. It's the Patriots at the Jets. Is this a good game?
It's a football game, Kyle. It's a football game. It's a football game that we're gonna watch.
Somebody was saying they were. I think it was a chatty house said, "Hey, what's the worst game on the schedule this week?" And man, I was looking through it, and I can't.
I don't think it'd be this one.
No, it's definitely not this one. But I also wouldn't. Texans Vikings, really good game.
Yeah.
Texans are at the Vikings. That's going to be a super fun game. Ravens, Cowboys, the 0-2 Ravens against the 1-1 Cowboys who just got embarrassed by the Saints. That's a really good game.
Packers, Titans feels disgusting.
Gross. Super gross.
You throw Giants, Browns in there too.
Lions, Cardinals should be fun. Chargers, Steelers going to be a rock fight. Two 2-0 teams, so it's inherently interesting.
First one to 17 wins.
Just a gross looking game. It's going to look like the 1980s. You'll enjoy that. Eagles, Saints might be fun. Broncos, Bucks is ugly. Giants, Browns is ugly. Pats, Jets is just so middle of the road to me.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, it's football. You know what? Like, I'm not going to complain. We're still, we're here. Like, I was like waiting all offseason, all like since the season, since February. I've been waiting all since February for football to get here. So I'm not going to turn my nose up at Jets, Patriots. I'm going to watch it. It'll probably be close scoring, but I don't know if it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, I'll be right. I think it's not.
We got storylines at least going into this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. The Jets, I can't remember. Were you in or out on the Jets to start the year?
Oh, I'm out.
Have they met or exceeded or fallen short of the expectation you have for them?
The expectation I have, they've met. They're about what I expect.
They're exactly the team I thought they would be. And I think they're super mid.
I'm out on them as far as like being Super Bowl contenders. Like, maybe they can go 9-8, 10 and whatever, like to get into the wild card. But I don't think they're winning the division or anything like that.
I don't think so either, man. And
they were fighting with the Titans, and the Titans are not good. Yeah, at least Will Levis is not good. Will Levis is the coach's name, Bill Callahan, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hates Will Levis.
He's not a Will Levis guy.
And then, you know what's bad? It's like, we need to get Mason Rudolph out there. That's who we're clamoring for, huh?
So if you missed it, the Titans head coach, this is so funny, on Sunday, Will Levis had a terrible turnover. Uh-huh. Like, really, one of those turnovers that you go, what? What? Because sometimes you see what the thought process is. Sometimes you see it's a bad play, but I see the vision. It was one of those plays you just didn't see the vision. He just let the ball, threw it to nowhere, and he fumbles. And Brian Callahan, the coach, is coming off the field. He goes, "What the F were you thinking?"
Yeah.
And so Callahan gets asked in his post game presser, "What'd you say to Will Levis?" And he's like, "I think the TV caught it pretty clear."
Well,
that's crazy.
No, it's even tougher too when coach is like, "Yeah, he's an adult. He knows not to do that." Like, he wasn't colored on the walls, bro. Like, come on, Will.
There's cameras on. We can see this.
Will, you're not a child. Like, get it together.
Yeah. So the Jets struggled to beat that team, and that's where I go into tonight. And like you said, I'm gonna watch it. It's gonna be on. I'm gonna follow it, but I have no expectations for this football game.
I think this one is probably first one to 20 wins.
Is this loser leaves town in the AFC East?
It's
in week 3.
I don't want to say loser leaves town because, like, the Pats, I mean, like, I don't know, like, they were never in town, the Pats. But for the Jets, if you lose to the Pats today, and maybe we give the Patriots, maybe we give the Patriots some respect if they win, because it's like, how far is Jacoby Brissett going to take you? You don't really have weapons on offense. Like I said, I don't know how long that's going to last.
Yeah.
But for the Jets, like, if they lose tonight, it's kind of like, all right, like, that's enough of this.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
It's not looking good for our guy Robert Saleh either.
The Patriots screamed through the first couple of weeks. The Patriots have screamed like 8-9 uh-huh. football team to me.
I trust the Patriots defense, which is offensively, some days they're just not going to have it. Most days, I'd say.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But I also don't know. We just talked about with the 49ers how much better they play in the second half of a year.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that's the Jets, maybe that's the Patriots. So I have a really hard time this early in the season, like, making sweeping declarations about teams.
Yeah.
But just everything I've watched with the Patriots and Jets, there's no, like, the Lions. I think the Lions by week 10 are going to be way better than the Lions right now.
Yeah.
I think the Packers, once Jordan Love gets back, I think the Packers by week 10 going to look a lot better than the Packers right now. Is there another team I can say? I think the Cowboys, honestly, are going to be a little bit better by week 10 than they are right now. Same thing with the Ravens.
Well, I think with the Jets, though, looking at them, it's kind of like the media told us what we were supposed to think about them. Because honestly, like, looking at Breece Hall, he's good, but I don't think he's this elite top 5 running back.
Yeah, and that's just it. All those teams I just named, I see where the ascension is.
Yeah.
I see where, even the 49ers. You may not believe in the 49ers, but you can see a path forward where you're going, hey, even without Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel, you see where they can start stacking up wins and win 10, 11, 12 games. Like, there's a path. With the Jets, and the Patriots through the first couple, I haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
Particularly because the Jets or the Patriots, like you said, didn't expect him to be there. They're still
rebuilding.
They got a really nice road win against the Bengals. They were scrappy and fought with the Seahawks in week two. They're 1-1. And that's fine. The Jets, everything I've seen through the first 2 weeks, and again, maybe by week 10 they look so much better and we're going, wow, what a team. Aaron Rodgers, MVP candidate. No, I just haven't. Garrett Wilson's nice.
He's great. Maybe.
No, I think he's really good, but then it's Alan Lazard, and it's, like you said, Breece Hall has not been super impressive to me at all.
Mike Williams is coming off a torn ACL, I think.
I'm not trusting Mike Williams to stay healthy, especially coming off an injury.
Defense is great, but I don't think it's necessarily
defense
top.
Is fine.
Yeah.
Like I said.
This is your fault, Greeny. This is Greeny's fault.
Yeah. I think it probably is.
Because they're not what everyone has said about them. They're not Super Bowl contenders. I don't think they ever were.
The rah-rah Jets fan is my least favorite sports fan.
Yeah. I was telling you before the show, they got a solid chant, but I get you on that.
But even Kings fans. Kings fans, I think, went into 2 years ago, whatever, hopefully they make the playoffs, but we're here for the vibes. Mm-hmm. And then they start winning. It was like, vibes are great. They're going to make the playoffs. Oh, my God. Amazing. And then you had an awesome 7-game playoff series. Vibes are great throughout. Going into last year, it was, okay, should be a playoff team. And just trying to, there was some angst and there were some ups and downs and stuff. But it didn't immediately turn to this team looks like a championship.
Yeah.
Maybe the most optimistic Kings fans, they're a title contender right now. And good for them. But the consensus among Jets fans is Super Bowl.
It's a New York thing, honestly.
Oh, it's so annoying.
It's a New York thing. It's the same thing with the Knicks. It's the same thing with the Knicks.
Yes. Yes. The Knicks were so bad for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally get a little bit good, and it's like, I don't know why they can't beat the Celtics.
Buddy, you didn't even get to the conference finals.
Can we take some steps first? Mm-hmm. The Jets are in a... I understand the vision of being really optimistic about the Jets because look how good their defense was last year. They just needed competent NFL quarterback play and they would have made the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers is better than competent. Aaron Rodgers is 40 coming off an Achilles tear.
And his last season in Green Bay wasn't necessarily great. The one before that was fine, but the one after that, leaving Green Bay, was not good.
Was not good.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen this guy playing really good football in 4 years. And I'm just to believe he's going to be that guy again? No, I'm not going. And the lack of humility in that, and the lack of from Mike Greenberg, and pick a pontificator who talked about the Jets.
Bart Scott,
former Jet. Pick a person who's not a Jet fan or former Jet. Everybody was like, "Is a Super Bowl team? Is an AFC title contender? Is this not there?" I saw. I'm sure it was out there. It felt like the prevailing thought, though, just ignored these very obvious flaws facing
the
Jets.
That's the thing. It was right there. It was all right there.
And maybe they go beat the brakes off the Patriots tonight, and we come in here tomorrow yo, there it is with the Jets.
We got a statement game already in week 3 for an NFL team?
Might be a statement game.
I think we should call it a statement game.
A statement game for the Jets?
Statement game, yeah.
Division game at home?
You need to prove something today.
You were supposed to be the best team in the conference, in the division. They were supposed to be the worst team in the division.
Yeah, because the statement is either, okay, yeah, they handled business today. The statement the other side is, okay, no, they stink.
You ready to say they stink if they lose this week?
Yeah, I'm so out on the Jets if they lose today. And I'm not trying to disrespect the Patriots. All right, we got our guy Sakira Bagley in here or whatever, but it's just, you're just supposed to beat teams like this if you're who you say you are.
Does Sakira Bagley play for the Patriots?
No, but fans and stuff like that.
Oh, he's a big Pats fan.
Yeah, he's a big Pats guy.
I thought maybe we had a Patriot.
No. Former Patriots Sakira Bagley, story I'll tell. But yeah, no,
I don't have proof that he's not.
The Patriots have a great defense and all that, but if you're the Jets, if you're who you say you are, Aaron Rodgers this, Breece Hall that, Garrett Wilson, whatever, then you should beat the Patriots today. And if you don't, then you're just not good.
I think that's probably where I land. And I give every team grace because preseason doesn't exist anymore, at least not for starters.
It's week 3.
So I give every team that little bit. I think I'm with you, man. At some point, this was supposed to be a team that was going to come out and hit the ground running and dominate.
Win the AFC East.
Yeah.
And you don't
I think if you can't do that tonight,
yeah,
you got a real problem.
All right. First statement game of the season. Let's go.
Anybody else got a statement game?
We might. We'd have to look through it. Maybe we do statement games tomorrow. Yeah,
we can do statement games. That's fun. That's on the docket. All right. We got more Niners coming up for sure. We're talking about problems with the Jets. The Niners got some problems of their own. We'll talk about that. But we also got to talk about the Las Vegas Raiders. They got a huge win last week against the Baltimore Ravens. They come from behind win in the fourth quarter. We're going to talk to Vic Tafer, who has covered the Raiders for a long time, now doing so for The Athletic, an absolute legend in the media game. Really excited to talk to Vic about last week. Take a look at this week's game against the Carolina Panthers for the Raiders. Debo Samuel also had an interesting quote about the 49ers that we're going to break down. We'll check in on the NFC West. We'll talk about those big 49ers problems. And we got to talk about Mel Kiper and his really, really bad NFL take.
I don't know. I might agree with Mel. I'm going to be a little biased, though.
All right. We'll talk about all that coming up in the next couple hours. We're hanging out with you till noon. Jesse Tapia in for James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil behind the glass. Jiffy Lube's a sponsor here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Jesse Tapia in for Kyle, in for James Hamm today. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube's a sponsor here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. And joining us now, Vic Tafer. He covers the Las Vegas Raiders for The Athletic. Vic, thanks so much for making time for us today. We really appreciate you, man. How are we doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
Excellent. So the Raiders got a big win last week in Baltimore. Were you surprised by that performance given how they looked in week one?
A little bit. I didn't think they're going to win. I thought it'd be a close game. I thought Baltimore was not as great as they have been in the past. I think the Raiders have a pretty good defense. That's pretty clear. And I think they got a lot of weapons and offense. I think we saw Devontae Adams and Brock Bowers could be one of the top duos in the league going forward. So they got some tools. So I think that I was not surprised it was close, but I was surprised they pulled it out in the end.
Which team do you think they're closer to, the team we saw in week two or the one we saw in week one?
Well, definitely week one. I think you got a real – I mean, sorry, week two. But I think because, like I mentioned, they got Adams and they got Bowers, and I think this running game has been terrible so far. I think it's the worst running game in the league so far was Zamir White. Mm-hmm. The O-line's having trouble. They're switching to the new kind of wide zone 49ers-style running game, and it's kind of been a rough transition. I think it should get better. I think especially with the passing game working, they'll make teams respect that a little too much. And so I think once they start running the ball pretty well and do some more play action, they'll be even better. So I think the offense has got a pretty high floor, high ceiling as well.
You've mentioned Brock Bowers a couple of times. He's been easily the most impressive rookie and maybe the most impressive pass-catching tight end so far this season. Based on what you saw in the preseason and in training camp, has his start surprised you at all? I mean, he's obviously off to a historic start, but has that surprised you in any way?
It doesn't. I mean, because when you talk to people who knew him back in Napa and also in Georgia, like wherever he's gone, like the first impression has been that guy is legit. Like back in 7-on-7 in L.A., kind of high school, going to Georgia as a freshman and walked on the first practice and he's making catches. And he has this rare explosive ability. He can make yards after catch. He definitely can get away from guys and has a little burst, which kind of catches you off guard. So we see it already on this level. So I think wherever he's gone, it's been a pretty quick transition for him. I think you see his skill set. He can catch. He's tough, and he's quick.
Bowers really stepped up this season. Devontae Adams is one of the best receivers in the league. Do you think we can trust this Raiders offense to score maybe around 20 to 21 per game, given the defense is probably going to give up around 18? I think last year the defense gave up around 19 per game.
Yeah, Antonio Pierce has said his goal is 24 points. I think that's doable. I mentioned the running game. It can't be worse than it has been. So I think and besides Adams and Bowers, there's also Jacoby Myers, who's a pretty good player, and Michael Mayer had a good camp, and Trey Tucker's a good deep threat. So there are other receiving guys they can go to besides the main two. So there should be enough weapons here to score points on a regular basis.
Talking with Vic Tafer, he covers the Las Vegas Raiders for The Athletic. You mentioned that running game and how much it's really struggled and how they're transitioning to that outside zone scheme. Is there any way they can improve that? Do you think it's less Zamir White, more Alexander Mattison? Is it something else? Is it changing something schematically? Do you think we'll see that get better as the season goes on?
Yeah, Pierce pretty much blamed the O-line on Monday. He said it's pretty much not Zamir White's fault. It's not Mattison. It's the O-line opening the holes up and getting where they have to be. So I think They tried some a move last week. They benched Cody Whitehair and brought in Andrews Pete. That didn't work. They put Whitehair back in. People are excited this week because it looks like the rookie, Jackson Powers Johnson, will finally play. He's been out with a concussion and an illness. So I think he'll probably play this week and make his NFL debut. Second round pick out of Oregon. Big time, kind of a Richie Incognito type, kind of a nasty guy who can ideally move piles. So I think he'll, if he gets going, and again, it's another reason why this offense should get better with the running game getting better.
Great.
They got Carolina in week three. Do you think you trust them to take care of business this week against them with Andy Dalton coming as a starter and benching them Bryce Young?
Yeah, I think the Panthers are terrible. I think the Panthers may go winless. I think I'm not, all respect to the redheaded Red Rifle, but I think he may be a little past his prime, so I'm not sure he can save this outfit. But their defense is bad. They lost their best player up front. There's not a lot of weapons in the offense. I think they're really, really bad. So I can't imagine any scenario, and this is probably I'm jinxing it like crazy, but I can't imagine a scenario where the Raiders lose or where it's even close on Sunday. So how's that for a jinx?
we'll keep that in mind when we're placing our bets this weekend. Vic Tafer, he covers the Raiders for The Athletic. Max Crosby is, to me, he's going to be a perennial defensive player of the year candidate. He's always going to be in that conversation. But you recently wrote about Robert Spillane, who's been super impressive in the last couple of weeks. In what ways has he improved, and is he good enough, do you think, to kind of sustain this level of play through 18 weeks?
Yeah, it just goes to show you can't really judge guys based on what they've done. And, a fresh start is huge for some guys. He left the Steelers, and I talked to people in Pittsburgh like, yeah, he's not much. He's just a guy. He's kind of a grunt guy. He's kind of a meathead. Someone told me just a downhill run stopper is all he can do. And he got here and worked really, really hard on his pass coverage all offseason with Antonio Pierce, who was linebacker's coach at the time. And he's just made a lot of plays on the ball and was a really surprising player. And he's a tough guy who's gotten better and better. Now he's talking about reading plays and breaking down film, knowing what's coming. So just a guy who all of a sudden has a really high ceiling and is a great fit with Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins and a pretty decent secondary. So he's kind of the heartbeat of this team, kind of underrated, but a guy who's been great since he got here last year.
We'll stick with the defense real quick. You mentioned Christian Wilkins and Max Crosby. How much has Wilkins opened up for that defensive line? Like Crosby last year, triple team, double team, whatever it may be. Now you had a guy like Christian Wilkins, that caliber. What has that done for the defensive line?
That's big. We've seen a couple times already. Like it was a big play last week where Max got the sack, where Wilkins takes on two guys. It's like a little stunt, and Max goes around him. That's kind of a unstoppable play so far. I mean, that's something they can really get different variations on. But he's got so much push up front, and Max is so quick. It's kind of like a moving the screen kind of deal, which I think will be really hard to stop for teams that won a third down in a passing situation. So I think it's got to be one of the better combinations in the league.
That's Vic Tafer. Covers the Las Vegas Raiders for The Athletic. Also does Vic's picks every week, which is one of my very favorite things to read and one of the reasons I subscribe to The Athletic. So, Vic, thank you so much for dropping by. Look forward to reading all your great coverage, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Vic. I failed to mention to the people listening that he's wearing a Hillsboro Hops minor league hat.
Yeah.
Minor league hat's so elite.
That's your bag, too.
It is. Very much so. Very much. It is so difficult when a minor league team rebrands and all their stuff gets splashed all over social media to not immediately jump in and go buy whatever.
No, if I see a minor league hat on Twitter or whatever, I think of Kyle Madsen first.
It's curtains for me every time. It no matter where it is, it doesn't matter if it's single A, double A. I have a thing with the American League West as an A's fan. I won't wear a Rangers hat or an Angels hat or a Mariners or Astros hat. I just won't do it. With minor league teams, I don't care. I don't care who you're an affiliated of. I will buy your hat if it's dope. The Rome Emperors was the last one I got.
That sounds solid.
But I just saw the Nationals, the Fredericksburg Nationals, just won their league or whatever. Great hat. It's really hard not to go online to FredericksburgNationals.com or whatever and buy it.
Look at you just keeping the minor league teams all in business.
You know.
The apparel and all
I'm
that.
I'm doing my best. The Hartford Yard Goats, same deal. Really, really tough.
Yeah.
Shout out to Vic Tafer. Man, I was so bummed because I thought, and we'll go back to the Niners in a second, but I was so bummed after week one because James and I were on this program talking up the Raiders.
Uh-huh.
Going, man, I think their win total was 6.5. I'm going like, man, I'm over on that. I could see this team going like 8-9, 9-8, being in the hunt for the playoffs. I don't think they'll make the playoffs, but I think they're going to be a problem. I think they're going to be tough. And then they go out and lay that egg in week one. Where you got Antonio?
Oh, I was concern too.
Punting on fourth down, down six from opponent's territory. It's like, oh my God, this is just, ugh. And then they go out and they're hanging in with the Ravens. And Vic Tafer just said, I expected it to be close, but didn't expect him to win. It's like, man, I didn't expect it to be close.
It was one of those games too where it's like, all right, Gardner Minshew kind of showed some today.
Yeah, like that's why you play Gardner Minshew, right? He's going to struggle in some games, but he's also going to throw you back into a game against the Ravens. And I'm back on that idea that, yeah, man, there's no reason this team can't go win 8-9 games. I think the Chargers are beatable. I think you can get them. I think you can get the Broncos twice. You got the Panthers here coming up.
Somehow you're going to split with the Chiefs.
If you get one against the Chargers, so if you get your next one against the Chargers, you take both from the Broncos and you get the Panthers this weekend, that puts you at 5 wins.
Yeah.
Just right there. So I'm back on board, man. That was really impressive last week, the way they bounced back.
They're going to be a team every week where it's just like, oh, yeah, I'm so in on the Raiders. They played well this week. Then they just put up a dud. They only scored 13 points or whatever this week against whoever you want to throw. It's like, all right, what was that? Now I'm back out. And it's going to be just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
They're going to like struggle to beat the Panthers.
Yes.
And I'm going to be out. And then they're going to kick the heck out of the Browns. And I'm going to be back in.
Raiders low-key need to beat the Panthers this week just for the sake of Bryce Young's career. Andy Dalton can't come in and beat the Raiders if you're Bryce Young. Because everyone's saying, oh, it's the weapons. He can't do this. He has nothing to work with, this, this, and that. If Andy Dalton comes in, and the Red Rocket is out here, boom, 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 boom.
Which he might.
Yeah, he might.
Andy Dalton doesn't suck at football.
No, there's no chance. There's no chance. No chance at all. Quarterback None. Just comes None. In. Comes in and beats the Raiders. It's not like Baker Mayfield ever did that, walking off the plane or anything like that for the Rams. There's no chance, Kyle.
I'm not going to say no chance because...
No, this Raiders team is a lot better.
Here's why I don't think they're losing. They might struggle a little bit because Andy Dalton's just a different look.
Yeah.
Maybe the Panthers offense is invigorated. But the Raiders are just too talented defensively. Yeah. And the Panthers are not talented enough. It's just, I think Vegas is gonna
move
the ball fine.
This is not yesterday's Raiders team.
No, it's definitely not. I saw the Panthers cut a guy, and somebody who covers the team said, this guy leads the Panthers in sacks. It's like, that's nuts. The guy had one. One sack.
All right, yeah, that's different. I was like, sounds like the Panthers let DJ Moore go, let Chris CMC go, Brian Burns is out of there, right?
Yeah, man, just horribly mismanaged their roster. Just so, so bad.
I was playing Madden the other day. Whenever you get teams in the playoffs, look at that. It's the Carolina Panthers. Oh, DJ Moore's on this team. So was Brian Burns and CMC still.
JC Horn was there?
Yeah, I'm still playing Madden 24, I think, by the way. It's whatever the one has Josh Allen on the cover, so that's why.
All right, very good. Raiders Panthers, 1:05 p.m. Eastern kickoff. You can hear that right here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader. I think they're winning this week.
I think so, too.
I don't know what the spread is.
It's only 5 points. It's actually kind of low.
Oh.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It's only 5 points. The Niners against the Rams, that's a higher spread than what the Niners are favored by 7, I think. Yes. I'll go double check. I was looking at it yesterday.
The Raiders being favored by 5 feels like a trap to me. That's scary to me if I'm a Raiders.
Oh, now it's not. Yeah, it's still minus 5. It opened at 7, now it's a 5.
Maybe it's just because it opened at 7?
Yeah, maybe it's because Andy Dalton's in there now or whatever, but it was at 7, now it's at minus 5.
Well, that's what people probably bet the Panthers and bet it down to 5.
Sure,
that line scares me, though, man.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those ones that casual bettors on Sunday are going to be like, wait, the Raiders is only 5 points against the Raiders just beat the Ravens. The Panthers stink. That's a sucker line, dude.
It's in Vegas, too.
I don't like it.
Are we out? Are we out on the Raiders this week?
At minus 5.
Okay.
Just because, not that I'd be shocked if they beat him by a touchdown or more.
Yeah,
they should.
Stephen McBride in the chat says he's completely nervous about the Panthers this week.
Yeah, man. It just, the Rams are, hang on, put a pin in that for a second. Ramsey said the Rams are plus 8.5?
Yeah.
Is that what you?
I got, ESPN has 7, but it's probably around there.
That's too many points, Doc.
No, I don't think so. The Rams are not good right now.
No, I know.
We just talked about it.
Are the Niners good right now?
Yes, elite quarterback, elite receiver, 100-yard-a-game rusher, solid defense, yes.
All right.
You lost CMC, you lost Debo, but there's still enough there.
All right.
Who's the starting wide receiver for the Rams this week?
DeMarcus Robinson.
You barely got that in. I don't even know if that's right. You be, we see
DeMarcus Robinson. I think Tyler Johnson is probably going to start.
Is Tutu Atwell healthy?
Tutu's healthy. Jordan Whittington, obviously, is probably going to see some burn.
Sounds like a 90s center in the NBA.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there's no...
You're thinking of Bill Wennington.
I'm just saying, yeah, that's exactly... You made my point. It's the same line of names.
Yeah, got a little concerned for the Raiders this week based on that line. I think they're going to win, though.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of those weird, like, 17-13 games.
I don't know.
You get a weird interception by Gardner Minshew early.
See, don't do that.
Panthers just hanging around.
No, don't do that, because that's worse. That's where it's like, all right, the Panthers might win this game. Like, it's kind of a reverse of the Ravens and Raiders last week.
They're hanging around, but the Raiders wind up pulling it out just because they're more positive, because they're more talented.
You got flags back there, Joe? It's the red one. We need the yellow one, but yeah, we'll get on that.
Come on.
That's a flag right there.
No.
And you know what? You guys have been letting James get away with a lot on this show. All right. Have some integrity. He's part of the league, too. He may not know the rules, but he's part of this, too.
I need flags, then.
Yeah, you do.
I was just going to start throwing them at him.
Yeah, yeah.
During the show, like, uh-uh. Like, that's crazy.
James needs to learn, all right? He's a rookie. We're going to develop him, and by year three or whatever. Yes.
Are we?
He'll be good.
Are we?
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. Jesse Tapia in for James Hamm today. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. On ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader. Want to remind everybody that right meow, the Golden Sky Music and Beer Festival at Discovery Park is running October 18th through the 20th. You can enter to win tickets at ESPN1320.com. You can win two VIP tickets to the Saturday, October 19th show. Tickets are also available at GoldenSkyFestival.com. Debo Samuel has a podcast, it turns out.
Who doesn't?
Nobody, apparently.
Does George Kittle have a podcast?
George Kittle does not have a podcast.
He feels like a guy that should.
Hmm.
George Kittle will have a podcast when he retires.
Yeah, I think that I think for sure.
He could be the next.
But like Fred Warner has one. Debo Samuel has one. The problem.
Does Brock Purdy?
No, Brock definitely doesn't. Debo just doesn't have a lot to say usually.
Uh-huh.
And so he did a podcast with Brandon Ayuk that was not super interesting.
Yeah.
It was not this like...
Debo Samuel radio hits. I've heard a few and they're all the same.
Yeah.
Hey, yep, all right.
You got to get him. It's just like... We had him on Candlestick Chronicles.
Yeah.
And we knew because we also had heard... all right, we got to try and get into some things that aren't the normal kind of... So you get him talking about shoes and Jordans and his Jordan collection and his son and all this. And he is pretty good. And then we talked about it, the Rams are biggest rival, and he's like, no, the Seahawks actually are, and this is why, blah, blah, blah. It's like, man, this is great. But a whole pod? Dude's just not... He doesn't want to talk to the media. And that's fine.
Someone's paying to advertise on there, so he's collecting
the check. Yeah, 1,000%. And good on him, bro. Mm-hmm. Very good on him. He had Brandon Ayuk on there, and Debo said, it's now or never for the 49ers winning a Super Bowl.
I got thoughts.
Please.
I think that's a little inside messaging going on right there.
There are so many things that you can take away from this.
Mm-hmm.
What was yours? What was the thing you took away?
Walk with me here. How many times have we talked about, all right, you're going to have to pay Brandon Ayuk, you're going to have to pay Brock, you're probably going to lose Debo eventually and all that stuff. Like, I wonder how much Debo knows, like, that's the case, and maybe he's not long for the 49ers here and stuff like that. Because I'm sure Debo Samuel knows he can get another contract, and maybe you don't want to take a pay cut here or whatever it might be here, but you can get more elsewhere. Maybe for him, he's thinking, I mean, yeah, they're going to ask for a pay cut soon or whatever it may be, and it's like, all right, this might be my last chance with the 49ers to get a Super Bowl.
So you think, he's talking it's more now
personally,
or never for him?
I think more for Debo Samuel. Because for the 49ers, it doesn't make sense. For the 49ers, you got a young quarterback, just paid your top receiver or whatever. Fred Warner is in his prime. Bosa's in his prime. Like, it's all there. They're not going anywhere.
That's where my first question came up. Because for me, it was like, well, it was kind of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was that they got to do this now. Because so many things lined up. That winning a Super Bowl goes so far beyond your roster.
Mm-hmm.
Winning a Super Bowl goes so far. Look at the 49ers. Debo, in that podcast, also said he feels like they've been the best team in the league for a while. I agree with him.
Yeah, that's facts, I believe. I mean, it's just a couple of years where they were injured or whatever it might have been, that, where
right.
they weren't.
But ultimately, being the best team on paper doesn't matter, as we've seen. They have zero Super Bowls in the last 30 years. it doesn't matter how good you are on paper. I thought in 2012, I thought they were the best team in the league too. Didn't matter. So for him to say that was, okay, yeah, I tend to buy that. But there's so many more things that go into it. And last year, they had everything on their side. They had the number one seed. They got to rest the final week. They had enough luck go their way in the NFC title game to come back and win that NFC title game.
Literally everything lined up for the 49ers to win the Super Bowl last season up until the Chiefs won the Super Bowl last season.
That's it.
It was all there.
It was all there until 4th-and-1 in overtime when Patrick Mahomes, read option, Nick Bosa dives, Mahomes, huge gain, first down. It was ball game from there.
Yeah.
That game was over.
Up until that point, it was there for the Niners. Yep. All the way.
It was all in front of them. They had a 10-point lead in the Super Bowl. That's why last year was the, you got to do it now. If they do it this year, great, awesome. They should be in contention, and if they fall short, it's going to be a disappointment, like no doubt. But bro, Christian McCaffrey's already hurt. Not something you dealt with last year. Deebo Samuel, already hurt. Not something you dealt with much last year. You already have Brandon Ayuk's contract thing. You had Trent Williams' contract thing. They're trying to figure it out early in the season. Not something you had to deal with last year. You've got everybody knowing that the end is nigh for this version of the 49ers. You're coming off a Super Bowl loss. That's already, we know that there's some kind of mental toll that takes. There are so many things for them to win a title this year. There are so many things that would have to go right that I thought last year to me was the now or never year. And while, again, the expectation should be that they'll be there and in contention this year, it is so unrealistic to be like, oh, yeah, they're just going to make another run. That's easy.
I think their window as far as, like, the Niners are far and away the best team in the NFC, they will be in the Super Bowl, because I think that's been the case the last 4 years. Like, you could just predict it. Like, the Niners will be there. And it's probably been right more times than not. Like I said, there's a couple of years they got injured, whatever. But I think that, as far as, this is the last year of that. But I think their step back is just a matter of they'll be the Detroit Lions, where it's like, yeah, they're a good team. I could see them making a run in the playoffs and getting to the Super Bowl. Like, they'll still be good enough to win the division going forward for the next 3-4 years or whatever. Mm. Get to divisional rounds, maybe even NFC championship games. Like, they'll always be in the mix. But as far as their windows just being, like, elite of the elite, I don't even know who else is in their tier right now in the NFC. Like, that's probably the last year of that, like, for this season.
Yeah, the other question for me with this was, because Deebo restructured his contract, which makes it a little more expensive for the 49ers to just get rid of him next year. And Brock Purdy's huge payday may come this offseason, but it's unlikely that it's going to kick in next year.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they'll move the cap hits around, so the bigger ones are in the future when the cap is higher, right? So the thing that stuck out to me was, does Deebo Samuel not buy Brock Purdy? Does Deebo Samuel not believe that he's going to be the guy who is the rising tide that lifts all boats, and as long as Brock Purdy is there, they're going to be a contender?
I don't think that's the case. Because, like, if it was, then you just, I don't know how much you wouldn't really believe now. No? You know what I'm saying?
No, because they have all the weapons and stuff now.
Like, you're just saying, as they're far as, like, you're going to lose guys and, like, it'll be like Brock kind of leading the way?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case.
No?
No, I don't think that's the case.
I don't know, man.
I think it's more of a personal thing for Deebo rather than, like, the 49ers going forward.
And I understand the urgency for sure, but I also think that's bad. I think if you go into every game thinking this is our last chance to do this,
it's a lot of pressure you're putting on yourself.
Yeah. And it reaches a point where you're now creating, like, there are stressors and pressures that come with an NFL season just in general. Like, it's a hard job. It's not an easy job. And every team wants to win the Super Bowl. But if you go in every single game like, oh my God, this is it. We're careening toward the proverbial death of whatever this is, whatever this version of the 49ers is, that's so much added weight that I don't think is helpful. I think urgency matters, especially late in the year. And we know that. We've seen the 49ers go into week 7, week 8, week 9 at 500 or worse, and then turn it on and win 8 of their last 9 and go to the playoffs. But I don't think that having that mindset going into a year is helpful.
I agree with you, but it's also like, in a way, if you're a player, like, how can you not? Because 5 years ago, you were supposed to win the Super Bowl.
No, I know.
And then, like, I'm just talking, like, from the players, I guess. Like, just now, it's 5 years. You're already 29, Debo, and it's just like, all right, yeah, like, we haven't done anything yet. We haven't done it. Now it's at a point where it's like, all right, I'm getting older. Guys are getting older. It's just kind of like we're hitting the end of our primes or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, all right, like, now we got to do it now. Like, we're just kind of, we've run out of time almost.
And that's where I think the Super Bowl hangover aspect of this kicks in. Fred Warner was also on Candlestick Chronicles. And that's the podcast I host with Chris Biederman.
Subscribe on YouTube.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And he basically said that, yeah, you can learn from previous heartbreaking losses. And you know how to kind of bounce back. And you know you still have that fire. And it's just about doing the right things and making sure. They did everything right last year. Mm. And that's why I think this year is different. Because they did everything that a team can possibly do to win the Super Bowl, and they face planted. And that's where I think, okay, you still got that fire, you still want to win, but at the same time, all right, you got the injury stuff, like, man, that's going to make this harder. Like, we're on our last shot, and it's already going to be harder. Oh, now Debo's hurt. Like, oh, my God. Oh, man, you lost to the Vikings. Oh, my God. Where now everything bad that happens gets magnified by 10.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the Eagles said last year, was they were 10-1, but everybody was miserable because they had lost the Super Bowl. And that's, I don't think the Niners are necessarily miserable because they lost the Super Bowl, but I do think they realize all this adversity that is in front of them, and they're going, dude.
It's going to be a lot more difficult this year than it was
so
last.
So much more difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why your expectation has to be that. It has to be Super Bowl. I think you're kidding yourself if you're looking at this version of the Niners and going, "Yeah, it'd be fine if they didn't go to the Super Bowl, didn't win the Super Bowl." Like, that's a joke.
I think the best thing going for them right now is just, I'm not sure who's going to take it from them in the NFC right now.
Yeah, but it may not be that hard to take. So
there's that.
There may be maybe several teams that can do it. All right. Speaking of several teams that can do it, we'll check in on the NFC West. We talked a lot about the 49ers. We'll take a look around their division, see if they're still favorites in the division. And we need to get to, I promise we'll get to today, the three biggest problems facing the 49ers. We'll talk about those problems and whether they can fix them in the second hour, which is coming up next. That's Jesse Tapia. I'm Kyle Madsen, Joe Brazil behind the glass on the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two. Jesse Tapia in for James Hamm.
Your boy in the studio's lost his mind.
Jiffy Lube is the sponsor. Why?
Because he said that Five Guys is better than In-N-Out. And then you got people saying, like, Habit is better than In-N-Out. No, In-N-Out is the best burger you get in California. Don't argue it. And that's that. It's the best.
Okay.
I don't want your take either, because I feel like you're going to disagree.
I love In-N-Out.
Okay. Joe, you got something to say?
You know what? There's a reason why you pay more for Five Guys, in my opinion, and the fries there are better. I mean, I'm Five Guys all the way. I will eat In-N-Out more than Five Guys, though, because it's way cheaper.
All right, Joe.
That's the appeal of In-N-Out to me, though.
Like, yeah, In-N-Out's the cheapest fast food you can get.
But it's also not, I'm also not, like, I don't know, man. I rock with Habit.
Oh.
I like Five Guys fine. Like, Five Guys is fine, but my problem with Five Guys is I got to take $58 to eat there. Like, I have to save up for a meal at Five Guys. Whereas if I'm going to go to In-N-Out Burger, I can take like $10 and
exactly
get change for my meal.
Is Five Guys worth $100 more it is than In-N-Out? I don't think
so. Can we all agree that Whataburger sucks?
Yeah.
I've never had it, actually.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, so there you go. Yeah.
Here, the funniest thing with Whataburger is I went there one time and I got a cheeseburger and I did it was so mid.
Yeah.
It wasn't gross. If somebody said, "Hey, you have to eat at Whataburger," I'd be like, "Okay, it's fine."
Yeah, it's just Texas,
I guess. It's not gross, right? But it's very much a Texas thing.
It's like, "Hey, this is from Texas, so it's awesome and it's just Texas." That's just their thing.
Everybody who ever defends Whataburger says the same thing to me. Mm-hmm. And they're like, "Well, what did you have?" I had a cheeseburger. Like,
yeah.
What do you think? And they're like, "That's the problem. You don't get the cheeseburger." Like, all right, then it's not a good burger spot.
You didn't get the breakfast plate. What's wrong with you, Kyle?
Yeah, no, you got to get the patty melt. Like, pfft. Okay, cool. Then Whataburger is a great patty melt spot.
Yeah.
You win. But don't tell me that it's a great burger spot and then tell me not to get the burger. That's insane.
Yeah, get Whataburger out
That's
of here.
That's insane. We're punting that.
Yeah.
Five Guys can stay. Habit can stay. In-N-Out can stay. Get Whataburger out of my face.
That's facts.
We're all on the same page there. Let's go.
Very good. Let's go. Where are my buttons? There we go. Coming up on Saturday here on ESPN 1320. Sac State football, baby! They're taking on Texas A&M Commerce, 3:30 p.m. Right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
Shout out to the Hornets.
Shout out to the Hornets, soon to be Pac-12, Sac State Hornets.
I hope so.
Me too.
I love that too.
That'd be so sick.
Aim high.
Yeah.
If we fall, maybe we get Mountain West, but aim for the Pac-12.
Yeah, definitely shoot for the Pac-12. I think everything they've done with the athletic department there, even since I've graduated over the last 10 or so years, unrecognizable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, incredible the growth they've had with their athletic department, and I'm hoping to see that growth land with Pac-12 bid.
Maybe we get Kyle Mattson to kick a field goal in the opening Pac-12 game for Sac State.
Bro, get me there. 40 yards. I'm lining up. I need to stretch first. That's coming up 3:30 p.m. on Saturday. And then Sunday, 9 a.m. So we've got the Raider game, right?
Yes, Raider Nation Radio.
Home opener against Carolina, 1:05 kickoff. But before that, if you're out running errands in the morning, maybe you want to lock in for that Raider game. Maybe you want to lock in for the Niner game against the Rams. Before that, we've got Houston at Minnesota. Coverage begins at 9 a.m.
Catch the second best team in the AFC?
Talking Houston?
Yes. Ooh. I think so. That was my take early on last week. I kind of threw it out on D'Lo and KC for like overreactions. The guys called.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, no, they're loaded. They're really good. I think they're good.
All right, nice. Got you on the.
Great.
What was that?
That was.
Got you on the bandwagon. Something
okay.
Fell. Yeah, something fell. I don't know. That was a big bang.
Nobody seems panicked out there, so I'm gonna.
That's the thing, though. Real quick, working in an office like this, like if something was really going down, and like I feel like no one would get up, and we just wouldn't know. Or like they would slowly walk out, like, oh, they're going to get lunch or something like that.
And we'd definitely get forgotten about.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. We're just kind of, oh, they're going to get lunch again without us. Ha, ha, ha. And it's like, oh, no, they're kind of just getting out of here because the building's on fire or something.
Mm-hmm. That's what would happen.
It's just thoughts.
That's definitely what would happen. Let's talk some football. We've talked a lot about the 49ers, but the NFC West, really interesting start to the year.
I don't know who's legit and who's not.
I'm with you. And my Rams to win the division pick, not looking great.
Oh, yeah,
don't feel good about it.
So yesterday, we were talking about the Rams with the guys on the show, and I was like, oh, yeah, Kyle Mattson needs to go to jail for fraud. Bernie Madoff Mattson for all the stock that you sold us on the Rams. I lost all my money. I listened to you. We were in on the Rams, and now...
You know what? No,
Now the company folded. Now the company folded.
I don't feel bad about it because the company folded based on... market factors out of my and their control. I did
you
not
told
know,
me to buy, and I did. I did. And now I gotta go tell the wife we don't have a house.
If you missed it, my actual take was like, yeah, it's decent little value. If you're, yeah. if you're picking a non-Niners team to win the West.
I put
like
everything. I put all the life savings, the kids' college fund on the Rams.
That the Rams are super banged up. I think they're out. I have no idea what to make of the Seahawks. They're 2-0, which you have to respect. Like, great start. Shout out to Michael McDonald, their new head coach. But they beat the Broncos by 6, and the Broncos might be one of the worst teams in the league at the end of the year. And then they went and beat the Patriots in overtime. Granted, it was in Foxborough. The Patriots might be frisky, might be a little tough. So I can't tell. I have no idea what to think about the Seahawks.
Does it mean anything if they beat the Dolphins this week without Tua? Does that...
Seattle?
Yeah. They were playing in Seattle against Miami this week. No Tua, but you still got guys like Tyreek and all that. Does that kind of make them a little bit more legit if they win this week?
And Skylar Thompson is the quarterback?
Yeah, he will be the quarterback.
I think it depends on how they look. If Skylar Thompson racks up 35 points and the Seahawks kick a game-winning field goal and win 38-35,
gotcha.
Then I wouldn't be as... I'd kind of still be like, yeah, I don't know. But if they just beat the heck out of Miami, then yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be in.
I mean, it is.
Miami's still talented.
Yeah, it is the Patriots and the Broncos. But at least we could say Seattle's being the teams they're supposed to so far.
Yeah, I have no idea where I'm at with the Seahawks.
Yeah.
We'll just kind of have to see. The 49ers don't face them until week 6. That'll be a Thursday night game, I believe. Is that Thursday night? Week 6? Yeah, Thursday night. Niners at Seahawks. Excited for that one. Seahawks 2-0, 49ers 1-1. Also 1-1, the Arizona Cardinals.
That's the team where it's like, huh, sick, dude. Yeah, are you going to go to the playoffs this year? Or was that just kind of the Rams were really banged up and just didn't have it that day?
So I think we're going to learn a lot about the Cardinals this week. The Cardinals host the Lions. And there was all this talk that because Arizona beat the heck out of the Rams last week.
Yeah, the game was over before it even started.
Yeah, was it 21-0 in the first quarter?
Yeah, Kyler was 8 of 9 for however many yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, it was nuts. And they just beat the brakes out the Rams. The Rams dealing with a bunch of injury stuff. And you saw the Cardinals defense kind of take over that game. It's like, okay, that was impressive, especially after they gave up 34 in Buffalo or whatever the week before. Like, all right, maybe the I lean toward being higher on the Cardinals than I do on Seattle.
Is it just because of how they beat the Rams?
Yeah.
Because Seattle's just kind of been consistent the last couple of years. So I feel like they kind of still get that respect.
I think the Cardinals' ceiling's higher.
I agree with that.
Like, Kyler has looked really good. Not great in week one, but he looked really good last week.
Uh-huh.
And if Marvin Harrison Jr. starts to figure it out, and you got Michael Wilson, who's a really nice player for them, a second-year player out of Stanford.
Is Kyler at his best, the top 10? Is Kyler at his best, the top 10 quarterback?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Kyler forces us to, and I think this is something that Lamar Jackson runs into too, where quarterbacks that move a lot, because our idea of quarterback evaluation and assessment has everything to do with the pocket.
Mm.
So everything you do outside the pocket is like, that doesn't really matter. What can he do inside the pocket? But the fact of the matter is that Kyler creates so many big plays by moving around that can you beat him in the playoffs by forcing him to stand in the pocket and make throws? Like, yeah, maybe for sure. But right now on a game-to-game basis, I don't want smoke with Kyler.
Yeah.
He can make all the throws. He's super hard to get on the ground. In the open field, he is as good as any quarterback in the league. I think at his best, Kyler is top 10. But I think Kyler might have the lowest floor of that group, too.
Well, yeah, there was that one playoff game.
Yeah. Where there's a handful of plays per game, it feels like,
uh-huh,
where you kind of scratch your head and you go, what was that?
Yeah.
Like, what, he was trying to do too much, or he just made a bad throw, or whatever it was, which is why I think there's not like a consensus on him. So right now, as of right now, based on how he's played, I don't want smoke with him though. He looks locked in.
Is it safe to say that the Cardinals' success hangs on the offense? Is the defense like consistent enough?
No, I think it's the other way.
Other way?
Yeah, I think they got to get stops. I think they're going to be able to score.
Okay.
They're so talented on that side of the ball.
I feel like with the Cardinals' offense, we've been kind of just waiting, and maybe we've been waiting more so on Kyler Murray to just kind of break through that ceiling and just kind of be the quarterback that he was supposed to be.
So he had a bad coaching staff,
mm-hmm,
and got hurt. Then last year he didn't come back until week like 10 or 11 with a new coaching staff. He's coming back off a torn ACL. It's just a whole, there were so many factors that I think went into last year and his performance last year. Whereas now he's fully removed from the torn ACL. It's his second year in the system. He's actually getting to play. He's actually getting real reps.
Yeah.
I'm really high on Kyler and the Cardinals from an offensive standpoint.
Yeah,
and I think we're going to learn a lot when they face Detroit, because I'm in on Detroit still. I think Detroit is one of the best teams in the NFC. And I if Arizona goes and beats them at home, I'll be in on the Cardinals.
So we don't feel any way about Detroit if they lose?
No.
I think it's fair.
No. I just, they're way too talented, and I think they're too well coached. And I don't think Jared Goff stinks.
He didn't play great last week.
Yo, that fourth down throw
against
Tampa Bay was not only was it short, just a bad throw,
uh-huh,
it was not into the end zone on the last play of the game.
Jared Goff, for the most part, is a lot better than what he was with the Rams and all that. Not that he was bad with the Rams, but there was always like, huh, all right, like, this
there
is
was
why you got to move
on.
Yeah.
On what they could do, yeah.
And sometimes he like kind of reverts back to that. But like I said, more times than not, he's not that guy, so.
Yeah, no, I think he's a good player. Yeah. I just don't know, when you talk grand scheme with the Lions, that's the one thing that holds me back with them. Uh-huh. It's like, can you avoid the two or three bad Jared Goff plays that swing a game? So, and then the Rams, man, I know I'm on fraud watch. That's fine. They have 6 players already on IR who they expect to return.
It's too much to overcome.
Yeah, like at some point, like
Kyren Williams is great, but you're just not going to sell me and we're going to run the football and we'll get through with these wide receivers here.
Well, yeah, we're going to run the football behind an offensive line where it's like two regular starters, a third string guy, one guy playing out of position. That's just not sustainable. Uh-huh. And there's a difference between the 49ers injuries, right, where it's like Christian McCaffrey and Debo, two huge injuries, no doubt. Kyle Shanahan talked about it yesterday. Those guys do two things. Those two guys do things on the field that nobody else on the field can do.
Uh-huh.
So it changes the way that you can call plays. And that matters, no doubt. The Niners offense, without those two players, is going to be worse than the Niners offense was last year, full stop. But I think they can be fine. I think they can be good enough to win games.
Yeah.
With the Rams, when you're down two starting offensive linemen and your top two receivers, and they've got a bunch of other injuries they're dealing with. Like I said, I think they've got six guys currently designated to return on IR already. That's just it. At some point, you have too many backups playing where you can no longer overcome that. Herm Edwards said, backups are backups because they're on the team because they can play, but they can play in the very limited role that you give them or the limited number of snaps that you give them. When you start taking DeMarcus Robinson, who came on strong last year as a second or third option for the Rams, but probably better as like a third or fourth option. When you start taking him and going, yeah, you're wide receiver one, eventually that becomes an issue.
This is not sustainable because he's not meant to be a wide receiver one.
Right.
He's just not capable of doing the things that you'll need.
Right. Maybe this week they are able to game plan and they see some things with the Niners, and this is what we'll talk about next, but they'll see some issues with the Niners defense that they think they can exploit. And hey, for this week, the Rams can be awesome with these receivers. But at some point, you're going to hit a wall with those guys.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we've seen from the Rams early in this year. I think that's why they lost to the Lions, is they just didn't have juice without Puka Nacua. And I think that's why you saw them lose to the Cardinals, because they got down so quickly because they just didn't have anybody who could block anybody. And that said, if the 49ers can't figure out a way to get pressure on the quarterback this week, I think it's a huge problem. So we'll talk more about the Niners-Rams matchup coming up tomorrow. That's Jesse Tapia in for James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the insider sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Joe Brazil behind the glass. I was talking about the 49ers problems because they have three really big ones that go beyond injury stuff, that go beyond it's just the first couple of weeks. These are things that I think are huge red flags for me. And we'll start with the defense because that's what we were just talking about, getting pressure on the Rams. The 49ers' third down defense last year was not great. They tied for 23rd in the NFL at 41%. I'm gonna round here because it's gonna be a lot of numbers. So at 41%. Okay. This year they are 31st in the NFL, allowing opponents to convert on 59.1% of their third downs.
That doesn't sound great, Kyle.
That would be the worst mark in the league last year by like 12 points. That's horrible. 59% is just an unacceptably high number. And that's the first big problem with the 49ers for the first 2 weeks for me, where they had a chance to win that game against the Vikings. They had a chance to, they get the touchdown from Jordan Mason. They're kicking it away with half a quarter left. You get a stop. You're going to get the ball back. You're going to have a chance to go down and score a winning touchdown. They couldn't get off the field on third down against Sam Darnold with no TJ Hockenson, with no Jordan Addison, and no Justin Jefferson. And you still can't get off the field?
Yeah.
With a fully healthy defense?
I feel like the game, I don't want to be too, I don't want to overdo it too much, but that was concerning the way they went out against the Vikings. I think they'll be fine, but it's just a matter of, you'd figure with the guys you got, you'd be able to stop that.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just a matter of Sam Darnold stepping up and Kevin O'Connell's a great coach and they just schemed up the Niners great that day or something. But
Kevin O'Connell top five for you?
No.
I think he's top five for me.
McVay, this is not an order. McVay, Reed, Shanahan, Tomlin. There's a fifth I'm sure I can get in there.
Kevin O'Connell's top five for me.
He's good. He's on his way.
I think he's there.
You want to crown him, then crown him.
I'm going to. I think he's a really, really good coach. Yeah, dude, and that's a little bit the problem, is I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if it's something schematically that's an issue. I don't know if it's Devondre Campbell just stinks that bad in the second level that the 49ers can't do what they used to do coverage-wise.
It's like he wanted to use the excuse. Maybe it's just the first 2 weeks of the season, but you read off last year's numbers, and it's not like they were great either last year. It's just something they just struggle with.
Yeah, so that's something that I'm keeping an eye on, certainly this week and throughout the year, and seeing what they do differently. And I think so much of it just comes down to rushing the passer.
Yeah.
Leonard Floyd had zero pressures against the Vikings. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Javon Hargrave has been fine, but he's not a game-wrecking player. Nick Bosa had a couple of sacks last week, but can't do it by himself.
Oh.
And that's why I think that number, 59.1%, like, that's going to come down for sure. Like, that's just unsustainably high.
You think it'll still stay bottom half of the league, though?
Yeah, comfortably. And if they can get up to 23rd, 22nd, okay, great. But if they're sitting there 31, 32, 30, if they're in the bottom three all year, they're not going to win very many games.
Yeah.
And I don't know the direct solution. I have a couple solutions for these other things that we're going to talk about. But defensively, it's not like, oh, they're missing Fred Warner. Like, no, man, they're healthy. Talanoa Hufanga's coming back.
Yep.
Their secondary, honestly, and this is a little bit the concerning part, Charvarius Ward and Diamante Lenore have been awesome. They've been really good.
I'd be curious to see if the Niners are giving up, like how much of the third and longs they're giving up for first downs and all that, or if it's like a bunch of third and shorts, like what exactly they're struggling with.
I saw somebody tweet, it might have been Josh Dubow from the AP. I'm gonna look this up for you, but they actually,
because if it's like you're struggling on third and short, then it's like you got to do better on the first two downs, and that's what's kind of
it's like third and seven plus they're giving, it's like 80 something percent,
and that's scary.
If it was a matter of, oh man, Charvarius Ward's just getting cooked.
Uh-huh.
Like, he got beat a couple of times, and oh man, Diamante Lenore didn't take the leap. Okay, then okay, you can see, but I don't think it's.
Because I don't subscribe to the idea either of it's third and long, rush four, just have everyone in the secondary sit back, and hopefully we'll stop them for a fourth and two or whatever. Like, you do have to get to the quarterback at some point, too.
I've got it for you.
What do we got?
This is via Josh Dubow, who covers Bears sports for the Associated Press.
Shout out Josh Dubow.
Also the number one Derek Carr antagonizer. The 49ers have allowed opponents to convert 8 of 11 on 3rd and 7 plus yards. That's 72.7%. The rest of the NFL is at 22%.
8 of 11 might as well be 100% in my mind.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, that's almost...
That to me is now a schematic issue.
Yeah, that's almost like not impossible, because like they're doing it, but just, all right, you guys, there's clearly something you need to figure out, because the rest of the league is not like that. That just doesn't happen.
You can't, and that was two of the third downs that the Vikings converted on their last scoring drive. It was like a 3rd and 7 and a 3rd and 8, I think.
Yeah.
And it was just easy work.
Maybe it's just a matter of they're not getting to the quarterback enough on third down.
That's it. That's 100% what that says to me.
You can cover a guy for however long, but you're not going to stick with any receiver for 7 seconds, 6 seconds, or whatever it is. Someone's going to get open at some point.
So third down defense is the number one problem the 49ers have to clean up, without question.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that third down issue also jumps over to offense. And this is where I think they miss Christian McCaffrey really bad. A, because they're not getting into third and short as often as they were. Mm-hmm. How many times did you see... second and long, and it was Brock Purdy dumps it off to Christian McCaffrey, who goes and gets 8 yards, and now they're in third and short.
All the time.
Third and short. Nothing there. Get it to McCaffrey. First down. Right. Last year, they were fourth in the NFL. They converted 48% of their third downs. This year, they're 20th at 34.8% of their third downs. 35%. They've dropped 13%. And this is where I put the onus on Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy. Christian McCaffrey is not walking through that door anytime soon.
At least for the next 4 weeks.
At minimum, the next 4 weeks. Ian Rappaport said it'll probably be more like 6. And maybe longer than that. Who knows? They're dealing with an Achilles tendon. So who knows when you're going to have Christian McCaffrey back? You have to figure this out. It cannot be like, oh, don't know what to do. Like, you're Kyle Shanahan. You're the offensive genius. Figure that out. You still have George Kittle. You have 3rd and Juwan. That's the guy's nickname.
You're not devoid of weapons here.
Yeah, you still have Brandon Ayuk, who's making $30 million a year, FYI. You have Kyle Juszczyk, who's paid to be the number two tight end, ostensibly. Utilize him. Figure out ways to get Jordan Mason open. Or if you don't like Jordan Mason as pass catcher, find someone else. But there has to be some kind of solution here, because converting 35% of your first downs is not going to get you in the end zone.
This is not, that is what not going to be do.
Good enough. Yeah. No, that's a mid-ass team.
It's like you said before the segment or whatever. It's like, yes, you can have the injuries, but you're just not going to win ball games playing football like this.
Not at all. I think they have to be better on first down. I think they have to get into more third and short. I think they've been in third and long way too often, and that's difficult. But at the same time, they have enough weapons with a quarterback who is about to be paid like he's at the top of the market. They need to go make plays. There are no other ways about it. And this is not a they stink kind of thing. This is not a everybody panic. This is a they're way better than this, or at least they should be.
Just ask them to play up to their abilities. Brock Purdy, be the elite quarterback that you are, Brandon Ayuk, be the number one receiver that you are.
That's it. And I think so of those two things, of the two third down issues, I think the offensive one gets figured out sooner rather than later. Defensive one is the one I'm really concerned about.
Yeah, the defensive one, they really need to look at themselves and figure out what's going on there.
Yeah.
Which is 8 of 11. Like I said, that might as well be 100% at that point.
They have to do something different, no doubt. The last one, as we get ready to break here, is their red zone offense. They, last year, were the number one red zone team in the NFL, and 67% of their red zone trips had turned into touchdowns. This year, they're 17th at 44.4%. So 44%, that's a 23-point drop. And I think you saw that really rear its head in week one against the Jets. But dude, you got to score touchdowns, man. And I know touchdowns are down across the league, and I understand all that. But that's something that, again, that's a Christian McCaffrey factor to me.
Debo, yeah, I wonder, too, how much losing Debo is going to hurt in that, too.
Yeah, there's going to be a Debo Samuel factor, no doubt. But that's, again, Kenny calls Kyle Shanahan a top-five coach. You call Kyle Shanahan a top-five coach. I think he's in that conversation for sure. This is why. You figure it out in this area. You figure out how to score in the red zone. You figure out how to convert on third down. And if Kyle Shanahan is going to be that dude, which I think he is, then I believe they're going to figure that out.
I think so, too. I think if we're looking at all these three things, the third down offense, I think it'll get figured out first. The red zone offense, I think, is going to look clunky through the next couple weeks still.
Yeah, I would think so. Like,
just losing, that's where, because we're waiting for someone to step up. Maybe Shanahan needs to scheme up Kittle a little bit more in the red zone, or Ayuk just has to get out of whatever rut he is, or they got to get on the same page. But that's one where you're really going to miss Debo and CMC. And I'm not sure who's going to who's going to be that guy to step up for them right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But they have the players. They have the coach.
Yeah.
That's it. Christian McCaffrey's out excuse works for the first couple of weeks. Okay, you're figuring it out. But now's the time, dude. You got to start getting those numbers up. Those are the three big 49ers problems. I'm going to keep track of those throughout the year because I think the 49ers highs and lows are going to go based on those numbers. And I think that's what this whole season is going to come down to.
That's fair.
Mel Kiper Jr. said something wild. I would like to get to that. And the 49ers need a new running back. I'll explain. Jesse Toppy in for James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
It's going to bring us back or what?
Arguments at the break, dog.
Kyle has this pack of ingredients, and we're trying to distinguish whether or not it's soup. It becomes soup, but it's basically bark if you were to hand it to you.
It's gone now. I had miso soup in my cup.
Yeah.
Your argument was that it is not soup.
It's not soup in the package, in the form that you've.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that we're arguing from the. And I swear to God, we'll talk about the 49ers and what the insane thing Mel Kiper Jr. said here in a second. This is so important to me, though. This is literally like, this is what I care about in the world. You agree with me that what was in that cup before I consumed all of it was soup?
Yeah, it's become soup.
It was miso soup.
Yes.
Okay.
But if you
we're on the page there.
All right, say you bought it. You bought it, right? You're like, here, I'm going to give this to Jesse. You're not like, hey, here's some soup. Like, I'm expecting a bowl of soup. That's like a square piece of bark.
Dehydrated miso packet.
There we go. We're good.
But if I'm...
No. Don't argue more. We're good.
The package says miso soup, though.
All right. Well, that's false advertising. We're going to sue.
we're going to miso sue. But if I advertise that as a dehydrated miso pod, that doesn't then what am I turning it into with the water?
No, we're good. We solved it. It's a dehydrated miso, whatever you called it.
Pod.
Yeah, pod. Right. That becomes soup. We're good.
Okay.
I was just looking for the name.
Okay.
Yeah. I won.
Good job, man.
Me and Dr. David, we won.
You can have this W. I'm proud of you, man.
Joe, put that on the board. That's one. I'm one up right now.
Soup battles.
Here we go.
Unreal.
I won In-N-Out earlier, too, so I'm up 2-0. I'm up 2-0, actually. I won that battle, too. I'm up 2-0.
You just decided you won the In-N-Out?
Yeah.
Okay. I asked you, is mac and cheese pasta?
I guess. I don't know. Like, I'm not a pasta expert.
It's not to me.
Well, it's it is, because it's a noodle. You're just throwing cheese on it, no?
Well, but, like, the ingredients are pasta.
Yeah, so it's pasta.
No, it's not.
You just said.
Bro. I invite you over to dinner. I invite you and
your lovely fiance. Yeah, the Sopranos are not having mac and cheese at their thing, but that's still pasta.
I invite you and your lovely fiance over for dinner.
Yes.
And I say, we're going to make pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pull up and we're like, here's the pasta. And it's mac and cheese. You'd be like, oh, you made mac and cheese.
That's like saying...
At Target, the pasta and mac and cheese are not only in different places, they're in different aisles, bro.
That's fine. Society tells me a lot of things.
Mac and cheese, not pasta. Mac and cheese, mac and cheese.
What are the noodles?
No, it's made of pasta. I don't disagree with you.
So,
but when somebody, but colloquially, when you call it pasta, you're expecting like fettuccine alfredo, spaghetti.
Yeah.
Something, a rigatoni.
Well, yeah, that's like saying like, oh yeah, we're going to have.
Some bow tie.
But it's like saying we're going to have pizza at the house and then your boy breaks out some Tony's frozen pizza. Like that's still pizza. We weren't expecting it, but it's still pizza.
No, because that's literally pizza. If somebody said, I'm going to make pizza and then serve pizza rolls, you'd be like, this is pizza rolls. And they'd be like, well, it's all the ingredients of pizza. Crust, sauce, cheese. See?
No.
Different thing.
Is there high-end mac and cheese? What if you throw bacon bits and like some little
bread crust on it? No, it's just mac and cheese. That's
pasta,
that's,
bro.
No, it's not. That's the whole thing. Is like that's just different versions of mac and cheese. You use pasta to make it, but when you're saying pasta, you don't like mac and cheese is a separate thing.
I say
I'm having pasta for dinner tonight.
Well, spaghetti is pasta, but you're not like, oh, I'm having spaghetti.
Yeah, sometimes you say spaghetti.
You always say spaghetti.
Yeah, but sometimes but if somebody said I'm making pasta tonight and then they served you spaghetti, you wouldn't be like, oh, this is weird.
If
somebody said they're making pasta and they served you mac and cheese, you'd be like, it's kind of odd.
It's odd, but it's still like, yeah, I guess. You kind of undersold it, but.
Exactly.
But it's still.
You're expecting some bow tie still. With the cream sauce or a vodka sauce.
No, that's, you know what? That's three dubs, by the way. Shoeless 99. Kyle, take the L. I'm
absolutely
up 3-0 today. 3-0.
Absolutely not. Shoeless 99. I've never even heard of
it. You're looking down on lobster mac and cheese right now.
Lobster mac and cheese is great.
That's the finest of pastas.
No, it's not.
Yes.
It's the finest of mac and cheeses.
Soren, macaroni is a pasta noodle, therefore it is a pasta.
No, I don't agree that it is noodle. Pasta is in the ingredients. But you admitted that it would be weird.
Yeah, it's weird, but it's still
okay,
pasta.
Okay, thank you. It's weird because it's not normal. It's weird because it's not normal.
That's not what we're arguing.
W for me. W for me. I am the decider. W for me.
James, get your ass back from Vegas right now.
Jesse, did Jesse win? Oh, wow, look, no, the buzzer played. Did Kyle win? Wow, look, the ding point. That's crazy.
Not fair. That's not
all
fair.
Right. Mel Kiper Jr. said something crazy. He did not say that Jesse won. Can I just play this off of here? I don't know how the buttons work.
Yeah, you're good.
I'm good to just play this?
Yeah. Joe has the pot where you can pot it up.
Okay, great. Joe, make sure this computer is potted up. Here's what Mel Kiper Jr. said about the offensive struggles in the NFL. We talked about this yesterday, or a couple days ago, where there's only been 69 touchdown passes through the first 2 weeks. It was like 110 4 years ago. Here's Mel Kiper's solution.
Mel, pick it up from there. Now that we've sort of set the table for exactly what your problem is with it, how would you try and solve it?
Well, I grew up with the best of the National Football League, 60s, 70s, into the 80s. You're talking about deep shots, right? The go route, the nine route post. You're talking about Terry Bradshaw in a Super Bowl hitting John Stallworth. You see Leroy Irvin diving, right? Just off his fingertips. There's the receiver. They laid it out there, right? Hit the receiver in stride. 65-yard touchdown. It's a beautiful thing to watch. That's what I want to see brought back to the National Football League. Okay? Check down kings, bubble screen sensations, boring football. Game management. Roger, I get it, but I want to see those deep shots. That's what the NFL was built on. I grew up with John Unitas, Fran Tarkington, Ken Stabler, Daryl LaMonica. You know, you talk about quarterbacks, Joe Namath. It was just right. Brett Favre when he was doing what he did. Burt Jones with the Baltimore Colts. You think about those quarterbacks who would throw the ball down the field. I'd say what Bradshaw did was Stallworth and Swan, Roger Staubach. That's what I want to see brought back. Say, well, you can't do that, right? Well, you got a five-yard rule with the cornerbacks, right? The Mel Blount rule, right? Now with the push thing with Hurts, you got to be a yard back now. So don't tell me you can't have those safeties
you see that
closer
spin
to the line of scrimmage than they are. I was at games where I'm thinking, hey, too high? They're out in outer space. Two, I couldn't even find us. They're playing with nine guys, right? Where are the other two? Oh, the other two, they're so daggone far back, and even though they're part of damn play. I'm telling you, we got to change this thing, and we got to have, hey, you can warn them. Enough for, hey, come on. Hey, guys, you got to get up a little bit, right? You're too far back. Warn those safeties, but you got to figure out, competition committee, somebody, Dano, somebody's got to figure out what that depth is, but it's too far back right now. The NFL is being ruined by these too high safeties.
Say it, don't spray it, man. I don't see how many sprinklers out here.
That's a wild take.
Yeah, he's so wrong, too. In what world was Joe Namath and Terry Bradshaw airing it out? Joe Namath is the most overrated player in the history of professional sports.
Sam Darnold threw a 97-yard touchdown.
Yes, like, what are you talking about, man? Like, they were not airing it out. The Steelers still run the same offense they were running in the 70s.
Somebody brought this up earlier. I believe it was Kyle Krabs from I don't even know where he works now. He's an NFL analyst. Why did safeties play low in the 80s?
Because they were running the ball,
because they were running the ball. And that's it. That's what the two high... So what happened was Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill wrecked the league by just going over the top of everybody, right? And then Tyreek Hill went to the Dolphins and teams had the same problem. And Patrick Mahomes is airing it out and they were doing the whole thing. So what teams did was instead of having a strong safety in the box and a free safety high, they just started playing two high safeties all the time and basically putting a lid on your offense to take away the big play, to make it so offenses had to not dink and dunk their way down the field necessarily, but go look at the 49ers against the Vikings. 17-play drive. You go 13 plays, 12 plays, 13 plays, 15 plays. You're starting to see offenses having to string more plays together, and when you're doing more plays, you are more susceptible to mistakes. And that is what teams are banking on. That's what defenses are banking on. They're saying, hey, we'll let you dink and dunk. We'll let you. You want that, hey, you know what? Third and four, you want that five-yard completion at your own 20? Okay, fine. You take that. You have that first down. But we're not going to let you beat us over the top. And that's what defenses have done, and it has forced offenses to be more meticulous and to matriculate their way down the field. And Mel Kiper Jr. apparently doesn't like it.
Yeah, Mel, relax, bro. We still let you do the draft and all that. Just relax, all right? We don't want to unplug your controller now and all that.
I understand.
That's very banned, the three-point line stuff right
there. Yeah, I understood. I didn't love banning the shift in MLB, but I get why they put some restrictions on it. Like, I hitting against modern pitching is just way too hard. I was kind of with it. But this is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, this is the most insane thing I've heard probably in the last few weeks. Maybe this year.
Like, genuinely, and this is something James and I have talked about, there's like this pendulum, right, that always swings one way or the other in sports. And some days it is the offense that gets the advantage, and then, oh, hey, over the next decade, the defense is going to start having the advantage. Well, right now, the defenses of the first couple of weeks have had the advantage, and it's up to offenses to figure out how to take advantage of two high safeties.
The way the NFL moves, though, wouldn't be the most shocking thing. All right, safety's got to play within within like 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, blah, blah, blah. Like I said, that won't happen, but I wouldn't be shocked.
I'd be a little bit surprised if they did that. Because there's just, you're creating, it's not, because, with the shift in baseball, right? You could put all your infielders on the right side, save for the third baseman who stood in the 5.5 hole. But you could put your first baseman, second baseman, shortstop all on the right side, and then you could just pound 100-mile-an-hour fastballs into the hands of left-handed hitters and force them to pull it. Right, there's nothing else they can do with this pitch. They have to pull it. Whereas, and there's a little bit of a disadvantage by, okay, we've only got one guy on the left side, but it's so easy to manipulate hitters into pulling the baseball. 8.5 minutes. And I love you so much, Joe. And there are so many things you can do to manipulate hitters into pulling the baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
In football, you're creating such a massive disadvantage by putting your two safeties way up high, 15, 20, 25 yards from the line of scrimmage, however deep they're going to get. You're creating it because now you're creating more space in behind your linebackers. That's where Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers offense and so many other offenses are starting to live, where, okay, hey, we're not going to take 3 and 4 yards at a time. We're going to take 12, 13, 14 yards at a time. So there are ways to take advantage of this. The defense is creating a disadvantage for themselves that is, okay, it's going to take away the big plays, but it's going to leave them susceptible to other plays. Offenses just have to be more refined. And I think making the game easier, a game that's already geared toward offense, making it even easier for offenses is insane.
Yeah.
There's two high safeties are not a new concept. It's not a newfangled defense. It's the most basic defense you can call in Madden.
I don't know what the hell Mel Kiper was watching, though, back then. Joe Namath and Terry Bradshaw were not airing it out.
Yeah. Hitting guys in stride, like, okay.
Johnny Unitas, Francois, relax, Mel. All right, relax.
And, like, there's definitely something to that, but the reason those guys were airing it out is because offenses were not nearly as detailed and intricate as they are now. It was, hey, this guy runs fast. He's going to run past that guy, and I'm just going to throw it to him. Because it wasn't like there were all these refined route trees and all these multi-talented, multifaceted players on offense. It was just kind of a need with modern anybody trying to rewind the NFL to the days of Johnny Unitas should not be talking about the NFL anymore.
Yeah, no, it's enough. Bill that Polian, I'm sure you're the same.
Oh, Bill Polian's so in.
Yeah, you did nothing here, but we're just throwing you into this. Yeah.
Did anyone
like yell at Mel Kiper after this? Do we know what the reactions were after he said this?
You can see in the video that everybody in the studio is like, okay.
Yeah, Green is like, this sounds insane for me.
Honestly, with the way ESPN moves, it wouldn't surprise me if Mel Kiper Jr. said this to somebody as a joke. And then somebody went, you need to go on TV with that take so we can create content out of this take. It's like Ron Jaworski when he went on air and said that Colin Kaepernick is going to be the best quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
And then they just ran with that news cycle for like 3 days and went, ESPN's Ron Jaworski says this. This is a little bit how that feels to me. Let's welcome in Damian Barling. It's time for the handoff. Damian, I don't know how to do this. Now that you just turn the mic on and you're good. I don't have to pot anything up or anything?
Nope.
No.
Joe's got the board. Joe's got the board right here. We're good. Let Joe handle it.
I don't know how to do this when I don't have to do anything.
Just lay back, buddy. Joe's got it.
I know he does. No, I know.
Let the pros handle it. Come on, rookie.
My issue is not Joe.
No,
my issue is that I don't know what I need to be doing, and apparently it's nothing.
I think there are a lot of people around here that don't know what they need to be doing, but yet we're here.
Boy, do I have a story to tell you.
Oh, Jesus Christ. But we're here.
Hey, man. Mel Kiper Jr. wants to ban two high safeties because he doesn't like watching quarterbacks not air the ball out. He'd rather watch Joe Namath.
Okay, man.
Or something.
I don't know why we do this. I don't know. Like, I kept seeing that on TV. Like, what is the purpose of continuously putting this on TV other than to make Mel Kiper look ridiculous?
That's exactly what it's for.
Like, oh, okay.
I don't know what the point in all of this was. It was quite silly. It hasn't even sparked a intelligent conversation. It's mostly just like,
the hell was Mel Kiper talking about?
Come on, man. What are we doing?
Yeah.
What are you reading? Kind of
I was counting our break.
Oh,
to make sure I had the right
out. No, you just look like something might have exploded at your home and you were debating what to do right here.
Sorry. We got a long break coming up.
Someone save the cats. That's fine.
No, we're all good. We were talking about the NFC West a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a ton of Niners, we talked a ton of Raiders. Are you buying the Seahawks so far?
No. So we kind of did this thing yesterday where we were ranking like teams like stocks and like, you know, the price would be, you know, kind of manageable at this. It could pay off really big, or you could just wind up getting nothing out of it, maybe lose a few dollars. I feel like the Seahawks is a team you could still get in relatively low.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think the return is going to be very high. So I'm not buying it. I think they're a solid team. Like they're a comfortable 8-9 win team. I absolutely see that for sure. But anything past that, a double digit win team, I'd be surprised by. I'd be like, yeah, I miss that one.
What about the Cardinals?
I'm a little more in on the Cardinals.
Same.
Because I like Geno Smith a lot, for the record. Mm-hmm. I love what he's done in Seattle. But Kyler's got a lot of, he's got a lot of those
Kyler's
superstar
got
intangibles. Yeah. And then Marvin Harrison is the one. So I think there's enough pieces around there to make that a little bit more interesting. So I'm more inclined to buy Arizona than Seattle.
And we're all out on the Rams.
Yep, lost my house because of you.
So tough.
Yeah, completely.
Yep.
I didn't know I got put on fraud watch yesterday.
Well, you listen to Kyle, you wouldn't listen to me. Like, I didn't get it.
They're all hurt right now. Like,
that's fine.
That's why I still feel okay about my take. I couldn't anticipate that.
That's good. They're all like, we're talking Cooper Kupp, we're talking Puka Nacua. Like,
half their starting offensive line.
Well, and that's my thing is, why didn't anyone say losing the best football player of like ever is a big deal?
They told us
for 5 years that Aaron Donald was the best football player to ever live. He's the greatest. He's a physical marvel. And then he's gone. That's okay. They're still really good. Like, well, wait a minute. Which one is it? Like, there's got to be some sort of impact to his absence, right? Yeah. Now, that combined with everything you just mentioned, it's certainly problematic.
Yeah.
But, that's they're done.
What do you guys got coming
in
up?
In my opinion. We're going to talk about young quarterbacks. There's obviously, I think tonight's game is a little more intriguing than I originally thought. I haven't gotten a chance to like watch the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we all watched, New York a couple of nights ago. Patriots had that week one win. They had a close week two loss. I'm a little bit more curious about this game than I originally thought. But tonight ties in pretty nicely to the young quarterbacks playing and not playing conversation, because obviously New England has a young quarterback in Drake May and he's not playing.
Yep.
And during preseason it looked like that might be an indictment of Drake May. Looking at the Patriots right now, it might not be.
No doubt. All right, that's coming up next. D'Lo and KC. Jesse,
you were not kidding about this long break.
Yeah, dude, we got it and we're late. Jesse Tapia back for James Hamm tomorrow. I'm Kyle Madsen. Sponsor is Jiffy Lube. I don't have to push any buttons. Until tomorrow at 10, drink water and be nice to people. See ya.